It's hard to imagine a more familiar story from the ministry of Jesus than the multiplication of loaves and fishes. It would also be hard to imagine a story from the ministry of Jesus that had any more symbolism attached to it. Every detail, absolutely every detail of a story of the loaves and fishes can mean something if you work at it hard enough, if you read about it, if you Google it. The numbers, the food, the actions, the setting have all been interpreted to mean something else, something more. A simple story from the life and ministry of Jesus, and it's not just the loaves and fishes that multiply. The footnotes grow exponentially. Take, for example, the 12 baskets of leftovers. That's not just one basket per apostle. That's enough to feed all Israel because the number 12 reflects the 12 tribes of Israel from the Old Testament. The meal was complete before they started because the 5 loaves point to the 5 books of Moses. And the 2 fish, well, of course, that's a nod to Noah and the ark, which we may need again very soon. 2 by 2 of every kind. I thought that one was a bit of a stretch. The people were sitting in groups of 50. The number 50 ties to the celebration of the Jubilee in the book of Leviticus. So this was not just a dinner party, not just a picnic on the hillside. It was a feast of Jubilee. And 5,000 people. Who knows whether that's an actual headcount or a particular biblically important number, or just the storyteller's way of saying everyone was there. Everyone, all, whole crowd, 5,000, all ate and were filled. So after one has squeezed out all the meaning out of the numbers, then there are the observations about the actions of Jesus. Notice he didn't feed the crowds himself. He called out, expected, empowered the disciples, a foreshadowing of the church's mission of ministry of compassion. There's Jesus welcoming the crowds, though he had withdrawn with his disciples so that they could hear, so that he could hear more about what they had done on their most recent mission trip, reminding us that the ministry of Christ happens in unexpected places and times. Hospitality and need will always trump the best laid plans. Then there's Jesus, after the crowd was broken up into groups and sitting down, Jesus taking the loaves and fish, taking, breaking, giving. The communion symbolism and the actions of Jesus are just too obvious to ignore. The multiplication meal is a Eucharistic feast. And then there's the 12 and their comment right at the beginning of the story. When they say this, "The day is over. It's time to send the crowds away so they can scatter around villages and countryside to find a place to stay and get something to eat." Seems pretty straightforward. It's time to stop the teaching and the healing. Tomorrow's another day. Pretty clear, pretty basic. Ministry needs a break even then. Not much symbolism to squeeze out of that one. Send the crowd away so that they may go into the countryside, they say, to lodge and get provisions, for we are in a deserted place. A deserted place. Now you see, that is no small thing. The disciple is telling Jesus that we are here in a deserted place, in the wilderness. It's a simple observation about their circumstances, until they mention that they are in a deserted place. A wilderness place. Like the people wandering in the desert. In the book of Exodus. A few summers ago, I joined a group of pastors on a 2-week-long pilgrimage to the Holy Land. As we drove from place to place, our Arab Christian guide would point out things to see near and far. There was always something to see from the bus. The city life of Tel Aviv, distant mountains with famous Bible names, signs marking an area with landmines in the Golan Heights. The 2-story separation wall and the checkpoint into the West Bank to get to Bethlehem. And the serious climb on the highway to go from Galilee to Jerusalem. And then, of course, the Mediterranean Sea, the Dead Sea, the Sea of Galilee, and on and on. I was a bit surprised how quickly some of my traveling companions fell asleep on the bus. I kept wanting to wake them up. You can't sleep through this. There were acres of banana farms along the Sea of Galilee, and many of the religious sites that we visited had beautiful gardens and orchards. Our guide kept telling us, reminding us that the landscape would not have looked anything like this in Jesus' time. The invention of modern irrigation had changed the desert landscape forever. During our week in Galilee, we could walk to the Church of the Multiplication of Loaves and Fishes from our retreat center. It was a short walk through an orchard where every tree, every bush was fed by irrigation. It took me a few days to realize our guide's point. It would have been much more desolate, less fertile, more arid in Jesus' time. There would have been no orange orchards there. When the Bible talks about wilderness, about a deserted place, the reference isn't to a lush mountain range or rainforest dense with growth. It's a mountainous desert. It looks like the moon. A lonely place. A deserted place. So that crowd of 5,000 all ate and were filled in a deserted place. That meal that was fixing to be perfect even before the miraculous multiplication was in a deserted, lonely place. The evening dinner that topped off a day of gospel proclamation and gospel healing and gospel compassion, when the Lord's attempt at an off-site leadership training event for the 12 was interrupted by the press of human need. That was all in a deserted, lonely, wilderness place. That Thanksgiving feast where Jesus took bread and broke it and gave it to the crowds and everyone ate and was filled. That happened in a deserted, lonely wilderness, far from life-sustaining, but clearly not a God-forsaken place. The Church of the Multiplication of Loaves and Fishes is owned by an order of German Benedictine priests and cared for by an order of nuns from the Philippines who all speak German. I'm not making that up. The day that we visited the Church of the Multiplication of Loaves and Fishes for our official visit, it was brutally hot. Half a dozen tour buses filled the parking lot. Inside, the church was not much cooler than it was outside. Now, this particular church is famous for the ancient mosaic tile on the floor. Up near the altar, the mosaic tells the story of the loaves and fishes. And that's pretty much what everyone comes to this church to see, this beautiful ancient mosaic. But it was too hot, and there were just too many people, and I really wasn't feeling it, so I went back outside to find some shade. I stood by a sign and read about the church and a construction project that was in progress next door to the church building. Turns out that this church, mostly a tourist location, also runs a youth hostel, a camp for kids with disabilities. So the church was much more than a tourist spot. It was much more than an ancient mosaic floor. Later in the week, I took a walk through that orchard, the orchard on the way from our retreat center to the church. And I stumbled upon a beautiful outdoor chapel right next to the water, right there on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. My traveling companions and I settled in for some good conversation and rest in the shadow of the Church of the Multiplication of Loaves and Fishes. We could hear the tourists in the distance. But this little chapel was hidden in the trees, a secret treasure, it seemed. We were there about 15 minutes when our afternoon break was interrupted by the sounds of children laughing, tumbling down the path. It was a group of campers and their counselors who would come down to the water to enjoy a snack there at the water's edge. As we stood to leave and get out of the way, I had to move quickly to avoid the 4 or 5 speeding wheelchairs and the young people in them and the young people pushing them wildly down the path. I avoided the chairs, but I couldn't avoid the joyful looks and the laughter and the life that came spilling down the way. I don't know where those young people were from. All I know was that there was some sort of joyful feast going on down by the water. In a region where politics offer no hope for better days, and fear and hatred flourish, and the future at best comes with a question mark. In a region where the wilderness still points to humanity's brokenness, and the city of Jerusalem stands forever as a symbol of humankind's inability to know the things that make for peace. In the midst of all that, a handful of campers were feasting right in the middle of it all. Because of that day, I will always remember that the church of the multiplication of the loaves and fishes is about a lot more than an ancient tile floor. It's about offering a feast in the deserted places of our lives, a joyful feast. Maybe no story in the life of Jesus is more familiar. But before all those numbers, before everyone was fed, before Jesus took the bread and broke it and gave it to them, before all of that, there was and there is this deserted place, this wilderness. And there, by the grace of God, is a feast in the desert. It is Jesus who invites us to this feast today. The meal doesn't start with the invocation. It didn't begin at the prelude. It doesn't begin when the servers gather around the table. The joyful feast begins in the deserted places, the wilderness places, the lonely places of our lives. In the most vulnerable and tender places of our life, where hope and future and sustenance and joy is defined by little else, nothing other than the presence and the faithfulness and the mercy of God. So friends, come, eat, and be filled, for this is the joyful feast of the people.